This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
I'm JT the Brick, and this is the official Raider podcast. Thanks for joining us this week as the Raiders get set to host the New York Jets this Sunday at O.co Coliseum. What a win for the Silver and Black in San Diego, beating the Chargers by a final score of 37-29 last Sunday. A dramatic game, a fantastic game. The Raiders showed up and jumped the Chargers early. They were up 30-6 at the half. They had all the momentum in this game. Give the Chargers some credit in the fourth quarter, outscoring the Raiders 23-0, but that game was over at the half, and the Silver and Black pick up a big road win in the division and get back to 3-3. They're at 500 with an opportunity to go above to 4-3 against the New York Jets. In that game, Derek Carr, 24 of 31 for 289 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions. Latavius Murray, 15 carries for 85 yards and a touchdown, but you got to give it up for Amari Cooper. Another tremendous game. He was the story on all the highlight shows all week long. Five receptions for 133 yards and this brilliant touchdown.
Bubble screen to Cooper. A block from Penn. 40, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Raiders! 52 yards to Amari Cooper.
It's so great to watch Cooper explode on this league and make big play after big play. And I want to congratulate the performance on defense of Malcolm Smith with the unbelievable performance with 11 tackles in this game. He was absolutely dominant, and DJ Hayden came up in a big way too. DJ Hayden's been criticized in the past, but he had an interception along with Malcolm Smith early in that game, and it set the tone. And great to see Tywan Jones break out and make plays over the middle of the field. Big win, and Jack Del Rio put a hell of a game plan together all week long. Thought the Raiders looked fresh coming off the bye week, but I wanted to spend a few moments talking about the Raider fans that dominated this game. I've been going to this game 18 years in a row. I haven't missed a game in this rivalry in San Diego, and I think that was the biggest turnout that I've seen, or at least the loudest turnout by the Raider Nation. It was a sea of black in the lower bowl. Charger fans were defeated before that game started, and I tell you something, I talked to Raider players about it and legends. People were looking up from the field, staff of the Raiders, and giving the thumbs up to the great fans of the Silver and Black. Oakland Raider fans, L.A. Raider fans, global Raider fans, keep it going on the road. That was really special. Now the Jets come to town, and this is a really good football team, and I think the Raiders have their hands full. If you look at the Jets statistically, they do everything pretty good this year, but the key is what they're doing on defense. This is a defense that has the best front up front in the NFL. They are loaded on the defensive line. They are ranked number two overall in total defense, number one in rush defense, and number four in pass defense. They got great corners in Cromartie and obviously Darrell Revis. The Raiders are going to have to play an exceptional game on offense if they're going to beat this powerful Jets defense. Joining us on the official Raiders podcast, Christian Dyer. He covers the New York Jets for Metro New York newspaper, and he contributes to Yahoo's NFL coverage. And Christian, good to catch up with you again after the Jets just lost to the Patriots. I don't recall a team getting so much love and positive coverage coming off a loss. What would have happened if they actually beat New England on the road?
Yeah, when was the last time that we had a Jets team lose a game and everyone was in an absolute panic trying to get rid of the head coach or fire a general manager or put up a billboard somewhere asking that both of them go? I mean, this really was a performance from the Jets that I think in many ways showed that this team and this organization is pointed in a more positive direction than they have been the past 4 years. I mean, this has been a Jets organization not only without the playoffs since 2010, but without a winning record during that stretch to 8-8 twice, 4-12 last year, and 6-10 a couple seasons ago. So you're looking at a Jets team that now suddenly is starting to build things in the right direction. The loss drops them to 4-2, but the offense looks good even without their star running back, Chris Ivory, in the mix, and the defense is number two overall in the league. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons to think that a 30-23 loss in Foxborough, playing the way they did, is certainly grounds to give optimism for perhaps a playoff push.
Yeah, I got to ask you about that game plan with New England where Belichick, they decided not to run the ball. They're just going to throw it all day and especially throw it short. Is that what teams, and we'll get to the Raiders in a moment, need to think about with the Jets with that powerful defensive line and the ability not to run it? The Jets have the number one rushing defense in the NFL, that the Patriots were smart to throw the ball short on third down. That's the best way to beat the Jets.
Well, and I think that's what the Patriots are always going to do. And there are going to be certain teams that are always going to present matchup problems with you every year. And right now, the Jets' two losses have come against those teams. The Philadelphia Eagles in week three, a team that necessarily doesn't push the ball down the field a whole lot, but will spread it out, hit Sproles out of the backfield, make some other short routes, and then kind of see what happens and methodically pick you apart down the field. That was their first loss. Then their second loss came last week. Certainly a Patriots team that's not going to beat you over the top all that much anymore. They don't have those kind of threats. But this is a team that's going to, again, systematically punch the ball down the field, work at a quick tempo. It takes away the pass rush. When you've got Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and Leonard Williams, all three of them first-round picks on that defensive line coming at you, the best way to negate that is to get the ball out of your hands quickly. So I don't think there are going to be a whole lot of teams that are going to be able to run the ball effectively on the Jets. But certainly if a quarterback can get the ball out of his hands quickly, and I think Derek Carr might be one of those guys who can do that this Sunday, the Jets are vulnerable.
Christian Dyer's our guest. I want to stay with the Jets defense. You mentioned the front and how great they are and top picks. But the fact is it looks like almost a perfect storm with Revis and Cromartie on the back end here. Typically, defensive backs play better when there's a great pass rush. Now, what more could Revis want from leaving a Super Bowl champion team and then coming into a team with the Jets that has a better defensive front? Revis and Cromartie, talk about the chemistry along with the back end of that defense, one of the best in football.
Well, perhaps more than Antonio Cromartie, Buster Skrine is someone. He was one of the first free agents the Jets signed this offseason, even before Darrell Revis and certainly Antonio Cromartie, comes from the Cleveland Browns. The Browns were devastated to lose this guy. He's pesky. He's tenacious. He's known as a locker room, great locker room presence, but a real weight room warrior. And he's not the biggest of guys, but he will get in your place and get in your face and play physical football. And, that when you have a press system like the Jets employ in their secondary, that's what you want. And Buster Skrine has been absolutely tremendous this year. Antonio Cromartie has been exposed several times. And the problem with Cromartie, JT, is this. He's a tremendous physical specimen. We've known that for years. The guy said he wanted to play wide receiver. He can throw a 40-yard pass effortlessly with a flick of his wrist. When you look at all the measurables, he's tremendous, but he's not a great thinker of the game. And when the physical side starts to go a little bit, and Cromartie's now on the wrong side of age 30, it's becoming more and more prevalent that offensive coordinators are going to target him with quick routes and then leave him exposed out there, isolated, where he has to make an open field tackle, which technique-wise has never been his strong suit. So I think more and more teams are going to go after Cromartie when they see what Buster Skrine can do and the high level that Darrell Revis is playing at.
Christian, talk to me about Todd Bowles and the culture and the change here, because you covered Rex Ryan. Now he's in Buffalo. He's talking again. They just lost in London. And they said, the big problem for Rex Ryan isn't the Patriots. It's the fact that the Jets are playing so well, and everybody remembers Rex being Mr. Jet and how much he loved the organization. What's it like being around head coach Todd Bowles, the energy he brings to practice, but he seems like a calm guy, and these defensive game plans have been fantastic the first few weeks?
Well, I think what's really interesting here is you have a head coach who's coming in, who played the game, has a Super Bowl ring from his win with Washington back in 91. He's someone who certainly knows and understands how the game is played. He's a defensive mastermind, and he's taking over a defensive-oriented team. But it's the offense that might be the story. And I think Todd Bowles, in his first year as a full-time head coach, has brought on board the likes of a Chan Gailey as an offensive coordinator, experience at the quarterback coach position, running back coach position, wide receiver, offensive line. He's not afraid to bring in guys who are going to step up and say, you know what, Todd, that's not how we're going to do it on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that's a testament to Todd Bowles, but also how secure he is in what he wants to do as head coach. And listen, Rex Ryan, 2009, 2010, twice to the AFC Championship game. There's no doubt that this guy was the right man at the right time for the Jets. But think about those teams, veteran teams. You had the likes of a Thomas Jones on that team. Nick Mangold was entering the prime of his career. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, Alan Faneca. You had Eric Barton, Brian Thomas, guys who brought their lunch pail to work every day. They were veterans. They didn't have to be told what to do. They were going to show up and do it and perform at a high level because that's who they were. But as these Jets teams got systematically younger, as they became more of Rex's guys, all of a sudden Rex wasn't the right coach for it anymore. He was too much of a cheerleader, too loosey-goosey with the mentality of the team, with making sure that players were on time, that they were tuned in, they were focused. And even now, look at the players who are getting in trouble on his roster. It's not the new guys who are coming in. It's the holdovers from his regime. So Todd Bowles had to come in and bring accountability to this organization. And I know it's very early, but through six games, you sense that there's a culture shift and a new dynamic here.
Christian Dyer's our guest, Jets insider. You know, Sunday in San Diego, I was talking to Raider legend Cliff Branch, who we had on last week, and he said, JT, watch Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's had our number over the years against the Raiders with Buffalo, Tennessee, and Houston. He's just a playmaker who understands defenses, can read it, can check down, step up when he has to. Talk about his growth in the system here and the fact that he just came off a big opponent in the Patriots. How do you feel he's bringing that momentum out to the West Coast to take on the Raiders?
Yeah, how about this for a stat? Right now, according to ESPN's QBR rating, which is the formula they developed, Ryan Fitzpatrick is fourth in the league in terms of all starting quarterbacks. That's ahead of Tom Brady. That's ahead of Andrew Luck. But we know his struggles this year. But Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, some of the other names that we're not used to seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick be ahead of, all of a sudden he's there. And that's because he's playing smart football. He's limiting turnovers. The only time he had multiple turnovers, the Jets lost. That was in week three at the Philadelphia Eagles. And he did enough when Chris Ivory, your star running back, was hampered by hamstring issues this past Sunday. It was Ryan Fitzpatrick who picked up the slack. And I don't think a lot of people around the league give Ryan Fitzpatrick enough credit for who he is and what he does. He knows he's not going to beat you with a 60-yard bomb. He knows he's not going to be a playmaker and a scrambler. But when he needs to hit the deep ball, he's shown he's been able to do it from time to time. When he needs to take off, he's shown that as well. But it's the short routes. It's the ability to get the ball out of his hands quickly, go with the first read that has made Ryan Fitzpatrick so valuable to this Jets team. And when you bring in someone like a Brandon Marshall, all of a sudden Fitzpatrick's genius and his ability to make a well-placed throw grows by leaps and bounds in terms of importance.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm looking at the defensive ranks. When we started off, total defense for the Jets second, rush defense first, pass defense fourth. But then I go to offense for the Jets, and total offense, they're eighth. Rushing offense, they're third. Talk about Ivory and the smash-mouth offensive set that they have, because it doesn't seem, even when they struggle running the football, they're going to abandon it because they think they have a philosophy up front to pound it right at you.
And this might be the Jets' Achilles heel, and we saw it on Sunday. When Chris Ivory was hampered by that hamstring injury, Bilal Powell was out, they had to turn to Zach Stacy. And Zach Stacy's a couple years removed from a 1,000-yard season with the St. Louis Rams. But certainly Zach Stacy at this point in his career is not an elite running back. He's not the kind of guy you can hand the ball off to 25 times and feel comfortable that there's going to be good results at the end of the day. So the Jets have become a little overly reliant on Chris Ivory, and I think to an extent they're running him into the ground. With all that being said, they do have Stephen Ridley, who hasn't been activated yet, coming off ACL and MCL surgery this past offseason. Certainly he is someone who can add something special out of the backfield if we can see the return of that elite speed. The Jets are going to be a team and an organization that's going to run the ball. They're a northeastern team. They're a cold weather team. And certainly when you have someone like Chris Ivory, who is a violent runner of the ball, who enjoys contact, who can churn out those extra yards behind a veteran offensive line, you're going to take advantage of that. But if Ivory's not available at the tail end of the season, you might just see the Jets tail off.
Hey, finally, as we wrap this up, what does New York, the tri-state area, Jersey, think of the Raiders after they beat the Chargers, buried them early, and are now 3-3?
Well, I think there's a lot of intrigue about this Chargers team. We've seen the past couple drafts, the way they've kind of been able to stockpile players on both sides of the ball. And I think that was always a criticism of the past Jets regime, that you look at the first round picks, they've consistently been defensive oriented guys. But the Raiders have been able to bring players on both sides of the ball, young players, and we know that there'll be a player in terms of free agency over the next couple years. We've seen them been able to attract top players before towards the tail end of their career. But I think there's a growing sense here in New York that the Raiders may be primed to make a nice, quiet run this year in the AFC West, but certainly sustain success over the next 3, 4, 5 years. And most importantly, something the Jets haven't had for a very long time, they have a quarterback who has the looks of being a franchise quarterback. And Derek Carr has a lot of things he has to work on, but he certainly has the tools. The Jets don't have anyone on their roster right now, perhaps with the exception of Bryce Petty, the rookie, who can certainly be that long-term answer. So I think there's a sense here that the Raiders could be a very good team for a very long time.
Yeah, and finally for the Jets, they got to feel good, depending on what happens at Oakland. Jacksonville at home after that, Buffalo at Houston, Miami at home. The Giants is a road game, but it's in the same building, so you don't travel. And then Tennessee. I mean, this is arguably, if you look at percentages of the teams you're going up against, win-loss, this is the easy part of your schedule, you would think, where the Jets really believe this is where the playoff push comes and they stockpile wins.
And there are some difficult games out there. I mean, Jacksonville's been up and down, but they're capable of beating anybody on any given Sunday. We've seen a couple of their close games this year, and that Giants game is certainly going to be a slug them out no matter what the schedule's going to be. And Buffalo with former head coach Rex Ryan. So there aren't gimmies, but you do want to see from a Jets perspective, 4-2 going into the Oakland Raiders, certainly a team they've performed well against over the past few years, being able to get a win and come out of this one at 5-2. We haven't seen a Todd Bowles coach team here lose multiple games in a row. So I think they want to avoid that for as long as possible. 5-2, you start to think maybe this is a team that can get 9-10 wins.
Fabulous work as always, Christian. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you again down the road. Appreciate it.
Thanks, JT.
Joining us next on the official Raiders podcast, Oakland Raiders ESPN reporter Bill Williamson, one of the best. I go back with him a long way. And Bill, an exciting time to cover the silver and black. It felt like a must win in San Diego in front of a lot of Raider fans, and the Raiders explosive in the first half really looked impressive. Go back to that game and what impressed you the most.
Yeah, I think you hit it. Just taking advantage immediately, just, you know, forcing their will in all three phases of the game immediately. I mean, that was not a fluke. I mean, that was a 36-6 game at halftime in every way, shape, or form. You know, I mean, they earned that. They just jumped all over the Chargers on the road, and it was very impressive.
Bill, how much credit do you give to this defensive game plan? Because Jack Del Rio, for the last 3 years with Denver, installing the game plans against the AFC West, being familiar with the Chargers, and what you know about Ken Norton Jr. and how they work together. Who comes up with the game plan? Del Rio, and then Norton with his advice coming in there? Because the defense really looks vastly improved.
Yeah, it has been better the last two games. I think that was really the key against San Diego, because, I mean, you know, stopping Phillip Rivers is paramount, and that really got it going, and then the offense and special teams did its part, but I think the defense really keyed it, and that was evident with the interception by Malcolm Smith to the 2-yard line right away in that first drive. You know, I think they collaborate. I think, you know, coaches don't really talk a lot about who slices the pie and how much. You know, it is Ken Norton's defense, but Jack Del Rio is the head coach, and Jack Del Rio's specialty is on defense. So whatever the head coach is, 32 head coaches, and whatever side of the ball they specialize in is the one that they each kind of spend more time with on their respective teams, and I think that's the case with Del Rio and the Raiders. And I think that's what's impressive about these guys is that they haven't been afraid to tinker and try new things, whether, you know, it's carry to safety or whether near on ball, you know, working on the tight end after just playing special teams. They're a work in progress. They know it, and they're very flexible and open, and I think it's serving the team well.
Bill Williamson joins us. I thought a tremendous game, as you mentioned, by Malcolm Smith and also DJ Hayden. Let's give him some attention here because a lot of Raider fans have been critical. Clearly a high draft pick, hasn't developed just yet. I think he needed that game with the interception and especially his tackling ability. Can you talk about how he's improved as a player and who's directly responsible for his improvement?
Well, you know, yeah, he does deserve a lot of credit. Sunday, Jack Del Rio said, hey, look, actually he said it Monday. He said he deserves credit for knowing that his hard work is paying off and he is getting better. And I think DJ is far from a finished product, but he did have his best game of the year, probably his best game of his career against the Chargers. And, again, the Raiders are well-coached in defense, and it's coming along. And I tell you what, he's going to need to continue to be well good. And, you know, it can't be a one-week thing. He's going to have to continue to move in an upward trend.
ESPN Oakland Raiders reporter Bill Williamson joins us on the official Raiders podcast. You know, watching Aldon Smith from the sideline there and seeing how fit he is, but he's kind of undersized when he's going up against offensive linemen who are 350 pounds. Do you like his development here? Are they putting him in the right spots? Mack and him are getting awful close, and they got close to Rivers a number of times. It just looks like they're both waiting for those breakout games.
Yeah, I think these are two really good players, and I think the Raiders are looking for them to show even more. And Smith, you know, look at Smith basically missed training camp, you know, he with his situation. And, you know, he was signed by the Raiders 2 days before the regular season, and he was thrown in through the fire. And now it's almost midseason, and you can see that he's really coming along, and I think he's had some good games. I think, you know, obviously the Raiders would like to see some more impact in the pass rush, but it's coming, and those guys are both complete players, and they are certainly part of the reason why the defense has improved.
Bill, you know what jumped out at me the most in San Diego was Musgrave's ability to attack the middle of the field. People are wondering with, you know, Walford and what they're doing with Rivera, why aren't these tight ends finding windows in the middle of the field, catching balls, even if it's 10-yard comebackers, whatever it is. And the way Tywan Jones was playing, the middle of the field was open, and it opens up space on the sidelines for Cooper and Crabtree. Is that just a breakout game, or do you think Musgrave and the Raider offense, they're going to attack the middle of the field more so they can open it up for the double teams that Cooper's getting?
Well, I think long-term, their best, you know, open field tight end, receiving tight end, is Walford. We got to remember, he basically missed all of training camp, and they have 6 weeks of training camp for a reason, especially for rookies. So he was pushed back a while, and in the last couple of weeks, we're seeing signs of him coming on. And I tell you what, I mean, I think that's a real X factor for the Raiders offense moving forward this year and then in the future. I think Clive Walford is going to be a fine tight end. I mean, I think he has big potential, and we've seen glimpses. So now that he's kind of, you know, figured it out and healthy and got the right amount of NFL training that you know, the stuff that he missed in training camp, I think we're seeing it show, and it's helping the entire offense.
Bill, the key to having you on this week was trying to get your vibe being around the team on how they're going to run the ball against the Jets. The Jets are number two in total defense, number one in rush defense, and I was shocked to see that Belichick in New England said, the hell with the running game. Brady was the leading rusher. They just forgot about it and decided they were going to throw on third and short and try to beat the Jets that way. It ended up working late in the game, especially in the fourth quarter. With Latavius Murray and the running game and the improvement of the Raiders on the offensive line, do they try to establish the run or copy the Patriots and say, no way, we got Carr, we're going to attack downfield?
You know, I think any offense needs to get the run game going. I mean, you know, we all know it's a copycat league, and the Jets are certainly spending time on that right now. Okay, what if the Raiders do this, the same thing the Patriots did us? So they're going to be ready. And the Raiders do need both things to be working. let's face it, at least between, you know, game week three and San Diego, the Raiders offense struggled some. So we have to see consistency from them, and a consistency is being balanced. So I don't think the Raiders say, no, we're just going to throw the ball. I just don't think that'd be their plan.
Special game for Amari Cooper, getting to know him, and you saw him at training camp. You're around the team as much as anybody. His work ethic is second to none. What's he like with you and the rest of the media in Alameda? Is this a shy guy, a guy who's just taking it all in, or a guy who's ahead of his years because he played at Alabama for Nick Saban?
You know, he's an interesting guy. It's hard to call somebody interesting that doesn't say many words. But I think that's just kind of who he is. I get the sense that that's kind of who he is with everybody. You know, he's just kind of quiet and polite. And he'll answer everything you ask him, and he'll give you thoughtful answers. But, you know, he's not a big conversationalist. It doesn't look like that's something that he's interested in. That's fine. He doesn't have to be. I think he's just a quiet kid. He just turned 21 this summer, so this is, you know, this is a big deal. I mean, think about when we were 21. We certainly weren't, historic NFL receivers. So whatever he's doing is working for him.
Finally, a perfect opportunity for the Raiders, Bill. We go back a while. We've seen this team early in their schedule be here before. A marquee game at home in front of a rabid fan base. This could take them to 4-3. And with the rest of that schedule, I think Raider fans really get in line and start talking about an opportunity to be a wild card team. But it has to happen with a win at home against the Jets.
Yeah, you know, me being an objective journalist, I think this team could make a run, but you're right, they have to do it. After the Cleveland game, so many people are just saying, okay, we're going to be 3-1 against the Broncos. Well, guess what? You have to go beat the Bears, and they didn't. So you can't look ahead, and the Jets are a good team. But I do think there's some favorable situations for the Raiders in the coming weeks. It's some winnable games. This is a big game for them. I think what we've learned about the Raiders through the first six games is that they're competitive, they're good enough to win. The three games that they've won, you know, the opponent has only had a record of 5-15, and the three they lost, the opponent's record is 4-14. That's just fact. That's not saying they can't beat a good team or they can only beat bad teams. That's just the fact. This is an opportunity to see what they can do against the 400 Jets and then move forward.
A must follow at B. Williamson NFL. Bill, great catching up with you. I'll see you Sunday in Oakland.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.